Another huge change we got in West Jordan was I couldn't get pretrial protective orders extended for the life of me, ever. I mean, I would go in and I'd argue for him, I'd file written motions asking for him, my judge would say, nope, sorry, he gets to go home. Until he's proven guilty, he gets to go home. Until we started doing this, and the judge saw, and what we started doing is we had our officers on their PC statement, right, I did a lethality and the victim scored high. Just a simple statement, no details, anything. And our judge, just as a matter of regular procedure, started extending pretrial protective orders every time he saw that on a PC statement when he reviewed those.
Yeah.
And so that was a huge change in West
Jordan. So if your law enforcement agencies in your venues want to start doing it, I am happy to, it's really a 3-hour training just to introduce it and explain what it is and how they can do it. I do the basics of it and the research behind it, and then we take Woods Cross PD with us. And then the UVVC person explains how the services people, what they do. And then we take Woods Cross Police Department and they do this amazing case study presentation. Has anybody seen it here? It's incredible because they saved the life of this woman and her 3 children by doing the lethality assessment. When they were doing it with her, she said, wait a minute, you think he might try to kill me? And they're like, yes, we think you're at risk of homicide. So she left her home that night. When he was released from jail, a couple days later, he came to the house. The neighbors called, he was arrested, and in his car, he had a shovel, duct tape, all kinds of weapons. He had on his phone photos of the grave sites he had dug for to bury them in. I mean, it's just undeniable that it will save people's lives. And so it's a really powerful presentation. If your law enforcement agencies in your venue want it, you know, I'm happy to do the training. Anyway, okay, so that's the trauma-informed victim interview protocol. The research is finished. The study, we're just in the process of trying to write it up as to what the results were. There's going to be a press conference in West Valley City tomorrow. Greg, I guess I need to ask your permission to go to that.
Dan.
I'm going to go there and just like stand there and be supportive and maybe answer some questions. But they're having a press conference tomorrow about the results of the study. The results of the study, and Sim's office has been a great job of making these cases a priority, and they've been really great. The prosecutors have been great about filing them. So the prosecution rate went from 6% overall with all the changes we made. Overall case prosecution filing rate went from 6% to 24%. But if you isolate the cases that had a trauma-informed interview and look at those cases only out of the study, the prosecution rate of those cases went from 6% to 89%. So it's pretty phenomenal that just changing that one part piece of the case, you know, makes the case so much better. So anyway, there's going to be a press conference tomorrow about that. And that's pretty much what's
happening. Thank you, Donna. Anything for Donna from the council? All right, Mr. Skeen.
You can see my report's attached here. You can see all the numbers in there. One thing I've been trying to do is being very active in getting out and meeting people, other traffic safety partners in the communities, and both government and non-governmental agencies. Just because it's tough to know what the issues are if I'm not talking to those people. So you'll see I've been out trying to meet with a lot of those people. Some of the things I'm currently working on outside of what's in my report. I'm trying to put together a Utah-specific kind of update on the new NHTSA manual. The new NHTSA manual came out end of last year. Get some Utah case law involved in it. The TSRP up in Idaho has done a great kind of model for it, and I'm working with him to get kind of a Utah case law-specific update to that. Should hopefully have that by our next meeting, I think is in June, is when we meet again.
Yep.
Hopefully I'll have that done by then. Developing my curriculum on things that I'm going to just make kind of my general trainings that I go out and give. I'm still working on those things. What else am I working on? Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at. I finally got a full quarter in since our last meeting. I guess I wasn't even technically in the position last time we were here. I hadn't been officially hired, but yeah, any questions for me? I really want to come out. One of the recommendations I've gotten from other TSRPs is I really want to come out and meet with all of the county and even city attorneys in your offices. I know all of you are busy, and I will be respectful of your time, but that's something I want to do. I want to go around to all the 29 counties. I want to meet with you or somebody who you, in your office you'd like me to meet with, just so I can see what's going on, boots on the ground. It's sometimes hard when I'm not in court anymore to know what the issues are. I understand that there's an expert that's been being used around from Florida, and we're going to work diligently to get her stamped out and discredited so she doesn't come back to Utah anymore, because she's not, she really shouldn't be testifying as an expert, especially for the defense with what she's doing. So I'm working with UHP, and I think, Sim, we're working with Salt Lake City on getting an expert from Florida to come out actually and discredit her so she no longer comes to Utah anymore. So that's just some of the issues in the impaired driving and traffic safety world.
Thank you, Tyson.
Do you
want
to talk about that, or
want to
more?
No, Tyson, no.
You did, okay.
We're in the right
direction.
Thanks to
the license plate. Pims. Okay, Pims, do you want to give a quick Pims update, and then we'll go rest through the rest of it.
Yeah, pretty much there's been a few people that have a little bit of a problem with when they go to Windows 10 and newer browsers and stuff. They, that little issue, most of it seems to be going okay now. But that just gives me an inclination to believe that it may not work into the future past too much longer because of the software changes. And they're starting to disable Java in the browser, which is what the application uses. And so it just, so far it's fine, but it could be a problem down the road with Windows 10 and 11 or whatever they're coming up with next. Windows 10 seems to work, but it has a few minor issues and has to be adjusted. But I'm still supporting a little bit. There's still people that need help with PIMS. They servers go down or the templates have problems or they need help, so I'm still doing that ongoing as much. But it's the number amount of time is way down. And the biggest question I get is, okay, where is PIMS going? I mean, what is going to happen? So my response basically to that is you can use it as long as it works for you, but we're not going to be changing it or making additions to it. And support, the way I just keep telling them, as long as I'm available, I'll give you whatever I can in support. So that's kind of what is going there.
Okay, I'm going to jump in. I was going to give Ron some time. You should all have a handout that of the online evaluations, but because we're running short on time, I'm gonna just let you know. Ron has developed this. We are going to, I'm gonna give him 10 minutes tomorrow right before lunch when I figure everybody will be there to walk through how you do the online evaluation, and then I'm gonna have him repeat it on Thursday because we get, you know, people that come and go. But just, there will be still paper evaluations, but we're trying to get, you know, into the paperless environment. So Ron's done a really great job. So be sure and stick, you know, stay through the end of tomorrow's presentation before lunch because he's going to talk about that.
And just one quick note on that. Don't know how it's going to behave with lots of people using it because I don't have any way to test the environment with if everybody goes in at the same time. I don't know for sure what it'll do, although I've done the best I can to model that, but it's, I just don't have the tools of a big software shop to do load testing is what it's called. So we're going to have paper backup if we need it for now, and then I'll find if any problems, we'll address them as quick as we can.
Case management issues. Jeff took the lead. Council asked him and several others, some of which are here, to meet with the Journal Technologies. I keep forgetting that's their new name. And Carpel. We had a phone conference, and then we got some pricing information from Journal Technologies. Jeff, can you explain that just really fast?
Yeah, jump in, whoever's there, let me know if you want to disagree. But Carpel, basically, after the end of the conversation, I didn't get the feeling that they were that much of a player. It's not so much they were interested, they just weren't flexible. It's kind of my perception. Is that fair?
Yeah. Sure.
Just where.
Yeah, so Journal or Justware, New Dawn, whatever their name is, we call it Justware. They did a pretty good presentation, and they sent me what their kind of proposed pricing sheet is, which of course doesn't matter because Boston's doing an RFP. But it depends a lot on how many people actually sign up into the UPC grant-funded program, which, again, we don't know what that's going to look like yet. But kind of how it works is for them to make it financially viable for JustWare, there's going to be a user fee as well as a hosting fee. So they want to host the data. They're relatively firm on that, but they want to host, but I'm not sure that they'll always require that. Their point is their big problem is they don't want to provide a lot of support for really small agencies because it's not financially feasible for them to only charge $1,000 or $2,000 for two licenses and then provide them a lot of support in the back end. So when they host the data, they can do all the updates automatically behind the scenes. So for 1 to 50 users, it's $1,000 per license plus $500 hosting, so effectively $1,500. And then as you go up to like 51 users, the license fee for the, so from 1 to 50, it's 1,000 plus 500. For 51 to 100, it goes down to 800 plus 350. And it kind of goes that way. So we really, to get a sweet spot on pricing, probably need to be about 200 users with JustWare. If there's above 200 users, it looks like, kind of tentatively crunching numbers, the grant would be able to fund part or most of those fees. There's a little hidden fee here. I don't know if he explained it to you, but not only do you have to pay for those licenses, but you have to add an additional 30% on top of those licenses for police departments to access your database, for the e-filing portal. I don't really get it, but
is that just a one? That was just a one-time fee. That was
no. You essentially buy 30% additional licenses. So if we have 100 licenses, we got to buy 133. Now again, this is just a proposal. Doesn't mean we can't beat them up a little bit, but I think it's doable within the grant if they come back with more or less with these numbers.
Do they have maintenance fees?
There are no maintenance fees.
They don't. It's a one-time license fee.
It's an annual.
It's an annual license fee.
That's kind of a maintenance fee.
Yeah. No upgrade fees. You get whatever. I understand, Sam. Are you allowed to talk about your RFP status?
What I can say is that we are in the final stage of it. Our issue was really just negotiating the hosting component and working out the cost differentials on it. I haven't got the final figures, but I know that my folks have been working out the last bit.
So the configuration that Salt Lake's going to get is even a more gee-whiz one than we all have already. And that's what we would get with this contract, is the high-speed, super-duper internet-based program. I'm not going there yet. I doubt James either. I've already had to deal with the internal strife. I don't want to do that for a while.
Yeah, change is not always fun for us. We will be there, though, in time.
Yes.
Eventually, what we're using now will be in, will look like what Salt Lake can.
As soon as we want it, we can have it.
Yeah,
soon
I think it's available.
But I guess the bottom line is, I think the grant, this is a possibility with the grant monies. Is that ongoing, Bob, or is that one
time?
It's
just one time. Just one time. So, I mean, we might be able to apply and get, another year, but for right now, it's just one-time funds. So then, here's where everybody else is at, is the AG was also going through their RFP. It's closed. The only really thing I was told is that they didn't get as many bids as they thought they would, and Carpel did not submit a bid. So the unspoken is that, maybe the other big player in the room submitted something. So it will be interesting to see if, with who Sim's office goes with, and if the AG's office goes with, that all of a sudden, we've got this buying power that would maybe able to extend the grant, even further than what we're thinking right now. You all should have received copies of the RFP. I appreciate Sim's office, Lisa Ashman, forwarded me their RFP. I got a copy of the AG's. Theirs was a little more comprehensive than what I needed, so I was able to tailor Sim's RFP down, and so that's what you guys got. I was able to get it into the state's required format, and so Monday afternoon I sent it up to state purchasing. They're going to sign an agent to work with me, and so I'm hoping to get a draft back from them with comments, and I'll just keep the council apprised as to where we're at. There was some discussion, could we piggyback on the AGs, could we piggyback on Salt Lake? This purchasing person sent me, she says in 63G 682-2103, prohibits that, but I haven't really had time to look at all the nuances. But for now, we're just going ahead with the RFP process.
This is just a question, and maybe they're not related at all. But under the Fence Act, there is money set aside, and part of the effort that's going to go there is the Blackfoot Information Act. I wonder if some of the information, just whether or some of the other, how it ties together, whether anticipating, whether there's been any kind of conversation about whether any of those monies might be used.
That's been in the back of my mind. You mentioned that to me before. I just haven't pursued it, but I think that's something that I keep thinking about. So, again, because we're getting short on time, I don't have much more than that. I've sent you everything in email, so hopefully that kind of brings up to speed where we're at on that. I just wanted to let me know on the John R. Justice grant. I'm sort of asking if we want to continue with the grant this year, and that was until I realized that next year, to participate in the grant, we would have to provide matching funds. That's not going to happen, so really, this year was the effect of last year. We administered the grant, and so the answer would be that one more year the funds are available, despite the fact that the amount that prosecutors are getting is so low, and it's such a grant, so we don't manage the grants, they're challenging. Any thoughts?
That was my leaning, is that obviously we're not going to be matching, but we'll finish it out when we get ready.
Yeah. Okay, so that's how we'll proceed. So just be aware, if anybody in your office comes to you and ask about John R. Justice, just explain that it's going to be going away after this year just because of that matching requirement. Brief update on LEOJ. Paul's agreed to teach at least one more course, so we appreciate that.
The course is going to keep going.
Right.
That's the last time with Paul.
Well, not necessarily. We'll see.
The last time until the next time.
That's right.
Multi-agency presentations.
UPAC, I'm just going to be really brief. Look at your summary. That's the best practices committee. They have decided to focus on Brady Giglio issues and we are meeting tomorrow as a committee during lunch, and we have come up, or my clerk has come up with a comprehensive draft based on another state that are dealing with Brady Giglio issues, and then we're going to create a checklist from that we can put out to offices. So we'll be reviewing that, so you'll be hearing and seeing more on that as we continue. Okay. Other business. Sean, Attorney General Reyes, has asked to meet with me. It's just kind of a see how things are going meeting, and I've got some issues that I can discuss with them. I just wondered if there's anything specifically that the council would like me to take back, and obviously, Greg is here on behalf of the AG's office, but I just wanted to open it up if anybody has any specific things they want me to bring up with him in that meeting. If not, it'll just be a chit-chat. Okay? If you think of anything, let me know. Okay. I'm going to skip this now.
All right, we've got on our agenda to go into a closed-door meeting, an executive session to discuss personnel issues. I guess that would be the only one since we can't discuss property acquisition or anything like that. So do I have a motion to enter into an executive session to discuss personnel issues?
I'll make the motion.
I second that.
Motion made by Mary, seconded by Sim. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So basically just members of